Good evening. My name is Christian Street, Acting Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's council meeting on 6 July 2026, and welcome especially to those joining us in the public gallery this evening. Could you please make sure that your mobile phones are turned to silent? It's 5:30 p.m. and I now officially declare this meeting open. Council now operates under the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, and under those regulations I'm required to advise you that an audio or visual recording is being made of the meeting. All persons attending the meeting are to be respectful of and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting, and language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. I will now ask staff to confirm that the audio recording has commenced. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees this evening, myself, Acting Mayor Councillor Street, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox and Councillor Mitchley, and we await the arrival of Councillor Richardson. From our staff this evening, we have the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Dave Stewart, Director of People and Finance, Mr. David Spinks, Director of Governments, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Daniel Snee, Director of Environment Development and Community Services, Mrs. Dalia Shakuti, Communications Lead, Ms. Sam Adams, and Acting Executive Assistant, Ms. Portia Jones. We have an apology this evening from Councillor Cordova. Moving to item 4 on the agenda, can I please have a mover that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 11 held on 15 June 2026 be confirmed as a true record. Moved in Councillor Antoli and seconded Councillor Fox. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Three, no. That motion is carried unanimously. To item 5, workshops held since the last council meeting on the 22nd of June 2026. We had a social media policy and WHS policies and policies workshop and a presentation on Blackmans Bay water quality investigation work undertaken to date. Moving to page 6, does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare on any item in this evening's agenda? No. Moving to item 7, is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No. Then we move to questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice?
Mark Dunellan from Huntingfield. 4 months ago, in a council meeting, I raised the missing school zone sign in Huntingfield. And it was recently, a sign was recently installed. What is it that made it take 4 months to have a school zone sign installed?
Ms. Shakuti.
Thank you. And I'm talking on behalf of our engineering staff, so just have that caveat at the beginning, is that members of the public or an organisation can apply to council to have a road speed limit reviewed. We then have to undertake certain, data collection process, for example, traffic counts, etc., that then gets submitted to the Department of State Growth, even if it is a council road. And the commissioner, I believe it's the Main Roads Commissioner, then needs to approve that. So that is the only authorised entity that can approve changes to speed limits. So council did all of those things as quickly as we could and submitted it to the Department of State Growth, and we then received approval a few weeks ago, and we installed the sign as quickly as we could.
Thank you. There is a funding allocated to a path between Sirius Drive and the Huntingfield parking ride in the recently passed budget. $350,000, sorry, off the top of my head. Can you provide estimates for when construction is scheduled to begin and when the path might open?
I think we'll take that question on notice, Mr. Dillon, given Mr. Mackey's not with us this evening, and be able to come back to an answer in that in the next agenda.
Thank you. I might also just note I forgot I already wrote to have that on notice, so thank you. And final question. Hutchins Street uphill lane was recently closed for a while. Did the council... there's a lot of reasons the council might consider closing this or nearby lanes again, like special events, other construction work, or reconfiguration of the road network. And having... was any data collected around the effects of closing that lane of traffic? That data would be useful to help inform how to better mitigate negative impacts in changing the road configuration.
Mr. Stewart? I'm not aware if we collected any data about that road closure. In general, we look at traffic management in particular to keep people safe during the time that construction's occurring, and also really aware of minimising impact on our community. That project was done well within the time frame that it was originally allocated to achieve. So, you know, a great job by the team that actually delivered that project. But we'll need to take it on notice about any data collection we do during that time. I would suspect we don't have any specific data from it, though.
Great, thank you.
Thanks. Are there any further questions?
Thank you very much. Boyd Nixon-Newer from Kingston. First, I'd like to just quickly thank Council for their work in responding to my previous questions on behalf of residents around the CCTV coverage at the last meeting. However, that response has raised some further questions and concerns within the community. It appears in gathering information to answer that question, Council's identified some cameras that were not working or operating correctly, perhaps some not fully integrated with Tasmania Police. Can Council confirm whether it was aware of those issues before that question was raised at the Council meeting on the last Council meeting?
Mr. Smith.
Yes, we were.
Okay. Thank you. The response also confirmed that several CCTV cameras at Kingston Park were not functional. How long were these cameras out of order? Have they since been repaired? And if not, when can the community expect those to be repaired? When did Council realise the cameras were not functional?
Mr. Smee.
The cameras that aren't functional, the camera's actually working okay. The issue is the electrical feed to them. And that electrical feed is obviously underground and it is shorting out. So the cameras have been working intermittently. It was brought to our attention by the police several weeks ago. However, they're coming on and off. We have a contractor working systematically back through the underground electrics to try and find the cause, but it's not easy. And that's why it's taking time.
Yeah, understood. Thank you very much. Final question. Perhaps a clarification. So on the June, 23 edition of the Kingborough Chronicle, an article titled CCTV Upgrades Planned at Bus Interchange included a quote from the acting mayor, and I quote, "There is existing CCTV coverage at the Kingston Bus Interchange, including both new bus stops, which provides a level of oversight. However, some of this infrastructure is older, technology with lower resolution compared to current systems," end quote. However, in the written response to my question, Council stated, and I quote, "Council has CCTV cameras located in the roundabout at the intersection of Channel Highway, Goshawk Way and Freeman Street, but they do not provide targeted coverage of the bus interchange." Look, I've had a few residents reach out to me raising perhaps that these two statements appear confusing, perhaps contradictory. Given the budget includes $200,000 to commence a new CCTV strategy, could Council clarify whether the Kingston Bus Interchange is currently covered by CCTV? And if not, what specific upgrades are planned, as alluded to in the article, what coverage they'll provide, and when those upgrades are expected to be delivered?
Mr. Smith.
To respond to the first half of that question, the cameras that are in the roundabout, they look down the street, they have a broad lens over the new bus interchange. Okay. Unlike the one at the Commonwealth Bank that has a targeted camera, it's fixed the awning of Day's Noodles, it focuses specifically on that bus stop. The other one, it's set back, so the coverage is poor. The cameras are older technology. They don't have that ability to pivot. So I can understand why there is perhaps some thought of ambiguity, but that was the intent to indicate that whilst the bus stop is covered, the ability to hone in on specific incidents is limited. As noted in the response, Metro do have a specific camera targeted, however that's not doesn't feed to the Kingston Police and it's not a council camera. The second part of the question, we have a budget allocation as you have identified. This is the first instalment of a number of years of budget to implement a CCTV strategy that will look to upgrade the existing cameras in terms of their technology and functionality, integrate better with the existing cameras. Currently have a number of standalone systems, so all of that integrated, and we would be working with TAS Police in relation to the implementation of those cameras so we get the best outcome from a crime-solving and surveillance perspective.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Tisha Archer from Moana on Bruny Island. My first question is the Bruny Island specific area plan a requirement of the LPS?
Ishiki.
Thank you. It's a part of the current draft LPS. NOSAP is a requirement, so the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act allows for a SAP to be a mechanism for place-based control or land use planning control if it warrants that. So there's no specific requirement, but it's a mechanism under the Act that can be utilised. It's utilised, so I think nearly all councils have SAPs for various reasons across Tasmania. Some councils have, you know, beyond 15 to 20, well, you know, between 15 and 20 different SAPs, so they're commonly used mechanism. So at the moment, the Bruny Island SAP forms part of our draft LPS that will, as most people are probably aware, there's a review underway, and pending the outcomes of that, it will then be submitted to the planning to the Planning Commission. Hearings progressing.
Thank you. Secondly, in 2024, in response to the exhibition period proposed by the exhibition of the proposed Kingborough LPS, Bruny Island Community Association, Bruny Island Environment Network and Friends of North Bruny co-signed a representation asking for the removal of the draft Bruny Island specific area plan due to the lack of genuine community consultation in its development. Earlier this year, Bruny Island Environment Network and the Bruny Island Community Association attended a meeting with council representatives and consultants undertaking the review, and again rejected the SAP in its entirety due to the lack of justification, the excessive environmental controls and the general poor quality of the document, where even the consultant said that the document was clearly rushed, vague and confusing. This was shortly followed up with a co-sign letter from Bruny Island Community Association, Bruny Island Environment Network and the Kingborough Land Users Body to Council and the TPC, calling again for the Bruny Island SAP to be removed from consideration in the current planning process. So my question, given that you've just confirmed that the Bruny Island SAP is not a requirement of the LPS, that it has clearly been rejected by the Bruny Island community, showing that Council is not aligned with the community it represents or its expectations, is Council willing to withdraw the Bruny Island SAP from the current TPS process?
Ms. Shiki.
Thank you. So what I would say is that the Planning Authority resolved for an independent review to be undertaken, and part of that was to do consultation both through the survey that was distributed to landowners in the SAP areas and then also with key community groups. That was undertaken and provided to the consultant, who is then doing, I suppose, the review. So the review will look at the consultation. It obviously will look at the representations. The consultation can't be used as, I suppose, formal representations in accordance with considering the merits of the SAP itself. That is one part of the review. The other part of the review is whether there is statutory and strategic plan and merit to the SAP, and then those findings will be presented to the Planning Authority, and it will be then for them to determine the way forward. I would also say that we did meet with a number of community groups, and there were mixed views regarding the SAP. So I think it's important that that process is allowed to be finalised and followed through before any decision is made.
And finally, is that review still on track to be presented by the end of the month to Council?
At this stage, yes.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions without notice from the public?
Good evening. Kim Phillips-Margate. I was just wondering what the current status of action relating to the noise complaint for the Salty Dog Hotel is.
Ms. Shakuti.
Thank you. All the questions for me. We did answer this in the agenda in response to Councillor Dean's questions.
I didn't see that.
Oh, sorry. That's okay. What I can say is that we've been working with the consultant to look at the monitoring, and the investigation is proceeding. Because this investigation is being undertaken under the Environment and Management Pollution Control Act, so EMCA, we do have to be careful of process integrity, so and also privacy and confidentiality of both complainants and the owner of the facility. So we're unable to provide detailed updates in this forum, but we are working closely with both the owner and the complainants and progressing.
So when are we likely to hear more?
Yes, Shiki.
It's a good question.
Sorry.
I'm not actually sure. We are working as quickly as we can. We understand that the owner and the complainants and the community would like this resolved.
Yep.
So I don't have an answer, but I hope it, you know, doesn't drag on. I'd like to think within the next few weeks, actually a month.
Sure, yeah. Thank you. And then I've also heard numerous, like many, complaints about potholes on Moody's and Allen's rivulets roads, and apparently there have been numerous emails and or complaints sent to Council. And I guess I'm just wondering if we can have an estimate on when they might be addressed.
Ms. Phillips, I think we're probably going to have to take that question on notice.
Sure.
Just because I'm not aware, and without Mr. Mackey here, I'm missing my point of truth on that.
Yep.
So I'll take that question on notice.
Fantastic. Thank you. Hi, Tamika Radkins of West Cove. So my questions are in relation to
the responses that were given to some questions that were asked last time, that in the last meeting, that we need some clarification on, please, because the responses weren't clear, and I don't believe they addressed or answered the question. So the first question was, has Council undertaken any assessment of the properties adversely affected by the Crown Road issue? Now, the response was it's not feasible to identify affected properties without manual property-to-property assessment, property-by-property assessment. However, that doesn't actually answer the question. So the question is, has any assessment whatsoever been undertaken for affected properties?
Ms. Shakuti?
No, not a systematic assessment, as answered in the previous response. We don't hold all the data that we would need to be able to make that assessment.
Thank you. So it's a no.
That's right.
Yep. Thank you. The next question, which we also don't feel was answered with any clarification, was when did Council first become aware that Crown Road frontage may prevent significant impede development? Now, the response was the SSP came into effect in 2017. It's not unique to Kingborough Council, and that we sought advice from NRE. But that still doesn't actually answer the question. The question was, when did Kingborough Council first become aware that this would materially affect landowners in Kingborough?
Ms. Shakuti, is that a question that you're able to answer?
Not with any great certainty, apart from the fact that it's been a known requirement of the SPPs for nearly a decade in terms of how it would impact specific properties or the scale of that. I can't answer with any certainty as to when. Certainly when it was raised by, and the strong concerns were raised by the community, which we acknowledged and heard and acted on, we sought advice from the external agencies, and we have passed on those concerns plus that advice to the SBO and to the TPC so that they have it on record in terms of their assessments and any future reviews that they do. As stated in the response, this is a statewide issue, and other councils are, I suppose, having to manage this issue for different properties across Tasmania.
I understand, and with all due respect, so I'm actually not interested in other councils, I'm interested in Kingborough Council. That's why we wanted to know when Kingborough Council became aware of the issue.
Ms. Atkins, is there a question?
Well, if the question is you can't answer it, then I guess you can't answer it. Thank you. So lastly, the other question was why affected landowners weren't individually notified. So the council response to the question about when they first became aware of the Crown Road provisions issue, it was said that officers have only ever advised information would be provided through the newsletter. Now, we didn't actually ask how it was being provided. It was why weren't they individually contacted? So the question is, given that the council now accepts that the issue could materially affect future development opportunities, why did the council choose a general newsletter rather than directly notifying any impacted landowner?
Just so that I'm clear, Ms. Atkins, are you talking about notification generally of zoning changes or notification specifically with respect to the
Crown Road
issue? I think the logical answer to that question is because it's incredibly difficult for us to have the data in order to be able to individually notify those landowners in any event, which has been borne out in the answers to your other questions.
Okay. Still don't think it's very clear, but thank you.
Are there any further questions without notice?
Natasha Knight Woodbridge. This goes back to, sorry, Delia's, your response to my questions from last 3 weeks ago. So just around the future development, so Council's response notes that existing lawful development approvals are not affected by the current zoning proposals. Can Council confirm whether it accepts that vacant titles, replacement dwellings and future development applications may still be adversely affected by the proposed rural and landscape conservation zoning, where permanent legal road access cannot be demonstrated, and if so, why was that consequence not clearly communicated to affected landowners before zoning recommendations were made?
Ms. Shikini?
I think the response is similar to what the Mayor just stated, in that it would have been incredibly difficult to identify those impacted landowners to do that. What we did outline in our response as well is that it's a provision of the SPP, and across all the different zones, from interim schemes to the TPS, there have been many changes from interim schemes to the TPS that impact future development, not just in LCZ or rural living or rural, etc. So this is one example of that, and we acknowledge that there's a different, I suppose, spectrum of the types of impacts that those changes may have on landowners. However, in terms of drafting an LPS, that is not something that councils, I suppose, A, are required to do, but B, could not do because of the very many changes and the hundreds and hundreds of, or thousands of landowners that would be impacted in terms of if we had to communicate all the different changes under each zone from interim schemes to TPS. In terms of the comments regarding the newsletter, my understanding of the question last week was that reference was made to a council meeting where it was believed that it was stated that it would be provided in notification be provided by letter. We've reviewed that and we talked about the newsletter. I believe, Council, we have tried very hard to answer the questions, and we really don't have any more information available to us to share at this point in time on the matter. In terms of future developments, we will be required to assess against the scheme in force at that time, and we will do what we can, application by application, to make sure our assessment provides the most practical and reasonable way forward for the landowner within the provisions of the scheme.
Okay. I've only got one more question. So, again, Council has advised that development standards were not assessed on a property-by-property basis when recommending zoning outcomes. If Council did not assess whether individual properties could realistically satisfy one of the fundamental development standards of the proposed zones, on what basis can Council assure landowners that the recommended rural and landscape conservation zone is actually appropriate for their properties?
Ms. Shikini.
Thank you. I think I've probably exhausted my responses on this one, in that in terms of applying the zoning under a draft LPS, We don't look to every provision of every zone and how it is going to change, and in terms of how zoning is then applied. It has been raised with the TPC, and we've also encouraged landowners who are potentially affected to raise this with their representations at the TPC as well. I'm not sure whether they can really consider it in accordance, for example, with Section 8A, etc. But there's no harm in raising it and having it, I suppose, on the record for their deliberations.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Are there any further questions without notice?
Thank you. Emma McNabb from Kingston. Can Council please answer what their complaints management policy is in response to an initial complaint, the time frame to respond?
Mr. Stewart, or not?
Let me check. Yeah,
I'll take that.
We'll have a look.
We're going to have to take that question on notice. We'll review the policy and answer the question on notice.
I can tell you, having just read it, it's 5 business days, but that's okay. In regards to Lewin Avenue, the matter 3210, I can see Council's notice questions on notice response and think in advance. I'm sure we'll get into that shortly. In regards to this matter, that process has not been followed twice. We've submitted an initial complaint and a subsequent complaint, and both times we have not received a response in that time frame. This is a fairly basic function of council. Can I ask why that's not being performed?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, thank you for the question. And I'm sorry to hear if the process hasn't been followed exactly. As the Acting Mayor just touched on, I'd need to go back and have a look at the detail of the complaints policy to familiarise myself with that and test this the scenario that you're talking about against it. I guess in the particular case you're talking about, it's a bit of a detailed one. It required an investigation out in the field and looking into an issue. So I guess it's not as straightforward as just writing a response. There is practical legwork required. So there may have been some exacerbating circumstances in terms of how council was able to respond to that, but look, I'll look into it further.
And what comfort can ratepayers, residents and the community have that matters are therefore handled in a timely manner if you can't perform that basic function?
I'm not sure I'm going to accept the premise of the last part of your question, Ms. McNabb, but I'll ask Mr. Stewart to respond.
Yeah, thank you. And look, I guess as well, don't quite accept the premise of the question in terms of the due to the previous answer I provided. Sometimes there are situations that are more complex. This isn't a purely internal looking process issue. We're investigating an external situation, and so that takes time. However, council has a suite of policies that guide how we undertake our work. We do everything we can to achieve the service level that those policies provide for and to deliver a quality outcome for our communities. Sometimes, like the various situations we find, they're not particularly clear-cut. They often have a degree of judgment, and we have to balance those different drivers and different perspectives that are in the community in order to be able to respond to different issues and complaints on a balanced basis.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any further questions without notice?
Sorry, mate.
Steve Parshall from Kingston. Mine's not a question. It's a thank you. On behalf of the organisation that I represent, or part of, Kingston Neighbourhood Watch, thank the council for your quick response and assistance in putting up the new Neighbourhood Watch signs that have gone up within the Kingborough area. We thank you for your help for that.
I'm trying to figure out whether there's any way to take that as a question, but I don't think there is. I'm just going to say thank you.
Well, I'll put a bit more to it. You don't
My name's Anthony Polson. I live in Kingston. Last meeting was my first full meeting. I've been to a couple of half meetings, and I have to be honest, I was a little bit disappointed at the jargon and the acronyms. I was lost. You know, I'm a reasonably intelligent person, well educated, reasonably well read, and I spent a lot of the meeting trying to look up acronyms. Some of them I found very hard to find. SSVAs was a particularly hard one. So I thought that I would really feel for people who had, you know, some sort of impairment, disability. So my question is, would the council consider some way of simplifying that, explaining? In my industry, main industry is a health industry, you know, we try not to use acronyms and too much jargon around patients and relatives. So is there a way that the council can look at maybe making that a bit more accessible?
I think it's a fair point, very well made. I don't even think I remember what SSAB stands for now that you mentioned.
Well, not just that, the LCZs and the LPSs, and we could go on and on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I missed a lot of the meetings as a result, so I went back and listened to...
I think it's a timely reminder to all of councillors and staff that there's more that we can do to make meetings and the things that we do more accessible. and especially, like you point out, in circumstances where we know that, 50% of Tasmanians are functionally illiterate and enumerate, and that is just the unfortunate reality of the circumstances of many Tasmanians, I think it's a fair thing that we look at how we communicate and, do a better job. So I think it's a fair point well made, and I'm glad that the CEO's here to listen to that as well as all of my council colleagues.
Thanks. Question two is, it took me, I think it took about 9 days for the audio to get onto the website. So I was frustrated because I had, I think it was, pretty sure, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I had my notes and I had what I thought was in the meeting, and then I was getting edgy waiting for this to come on. I think it was the Friday after the meeting, you know, like about 9 days later, I could be wrong. And I kept looking and looking for the minutes, and it came onto the website eventually, and I was wondering why it takes so long. I was just upload an MP3 to a website.
Yeah, thanks for that point. Look, I will note that the YouTube video is available immediately, so it's live streamed, the council meeting, and then it's immediately available on YouTube, so you can always have a look there. You can probably get a bit more look and feel from the visuals as part of that as well. So I will note that that's available immediately post the meeting. Look, take your point around the minutes and the audio recording. As you will note, when we do have a lot of questions and answers, there's a lot of information to be transcribed into the minutes. Then there's a quality control check that we need to have across that. So that all takes time. And the more and more questions we have, the more and more effort and work that takes. Not that I'm in any way trying to diminish people asking questions, but it's just a reality that, there's a bit of work in that. So we will do our level best to make sure that those recordings and minutes are available as quick as we can, but it's just a reality of, I guess, the process that goes in behind the scenes.
Yeah, okay. I just found out that it was on YouTube, as in accessible. I only thought it was on the website, sure. So that's why I was hanging out for it to turn up there. My third question, with the digital strategy, are there plans for the council to have an opt-out option for people if they want to opt out at any point, for any part of anything to do with the digital strategy?
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, so the digital strategy is a suite of tools and approaches that we'll be using in council to help us first and foremost do things more effectively internally. So many of the things that are happening within there, you mightn't necessarily from the outside see, but there'll be process improvements, efficiencies that we can gain inside the organisation, process engineering, those types of things that will go on behind making this a smarter and faster organisation to turn things around. In terms of the customer or community facing elements of that, look, it's not an exclusively a digital approach. There will be elements that are digital first, so making I guess many of our tools available on the website and making it the easiest way for people to engage with us. But none of this diminishes the fact that we will still have our customer service approach. You still have the customer service centre that you can come in and talk to people. So none of that face-to-face is removed from the process. So I can't think of a single example where it'll solely be a digital approach that we'll be taking. What it is though, many people will prefer to engage with us that way, so it's providing more fit-for-purpose tools in terms of how people engage with council.
Right, thanks.
Thank you. Are there any further questions without notice from the public?
Joel Hodson, Middleton. Can I say a thank you as well? Just to counsel.
I don't want to get into a habit of praise, Mr. Hodson, but if you're quick.
I'll be quick. I've listened to and looked at a few other policies that other councils have regarding question time, and it's nice that we don't have, like, we do have limitations in questions that we can ask, but as of yet, there's no limitation in time that we may take to do that, and it's really great. I'm really grateful for that personally, and I'm sure many other people are. Thank you.
If you don't get on with it, then there might be.
Okay. I've been trying to find it. So what was the outcome of Action 63 of the 2019 Open Space Strategy? So this is regarding the Middleton foreshore.
I don't... Mr. Smee's good, but I suspect...
I'm happy to take it on notice.
But I suspect we might need to take that on notice, Mr. Hodson.
Yep. Secondly, I'm asking this parallel to, not for, the South Channel Ratepayers Association. Recently, there's been some discussion, and both Councillor and our CEO attended a meeting with the association regarding the foreshore area. I'm curious about my understanding. There hasn't been any climate change coastal inundation reporting or mapping done for that area, none that I could find anyway. I'm curious if that's something that council is going to be or is undertaking, considering the answers to some of the questions that the Ratepayers Association received regarding work on the foreshore.
I'm getting some blank looks, Mr. Hodson, so Mr. Stewart.
Yep, thank you. So I'm not aware of any specific mapping that we have either done or planned in relation to the length of the Middleton foreshore there. I do remember the answers that I provided to the Ratepayers Association during the meeting that I had with them, and it was specifically about a playground there that they were asking for basically a renewal of, and I indicated that the data that we had and the condition rating of that playground still indicated that it had a fair degree of useful life. I did indicate, though, that there may be a move to relocate it at a later stage for when it was redeveloped, when it came time in its renewal cycle for that, due to concern around coastal inundation and the fact that the water may come across it. I then, post that meeting, went down and had a look at it as well. Without the data and without doing studies, I'm still pretty confident in that response that I provided, which was based on the advice that I'd received from the team, that it is a low-lying area with high tides, storm events. There's the risk of that having water across it more and more. And I think for long-term benefit, it may be a good idea for council to consider whether or not that is renewed at the same site or whether or not it is relocated.
Yep, thank you. With that in mind, with the understanding that there is the potential for inundation there, will council look at undertaking some studies and management of that area, specifically because it is an area that's used by local traffic? It is a location, a nearest safe place location in the event of, say, a bushfire, for instance, and is... Did you get my question?
Yes, sure.
I think I got your question. So, look, coastal inundation and the impacts of climate change is something that we need to grapple with right across the sort of length and breadth of Kingborough, and not just Kingborough. That, you know, applies around Tasmania and around Australia, the world. There's no easy answer to it, let's be honest. There's always going to be a balance of the different options that are available to councils and to other government agencies in terms of how we respond. Canberra is part of a project working with the Local Government Association of Tasmania and a couple of other councils principally, but I think 19 councils in total have signed up to it, looking at sort of our coastal environments and what needs to be done there. I don't have the details of that top of mind, but it is something we're looking at a more strategic level about how local government authorities manage the impacts of our vulnerable coastlines.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions without notice from the public? If not, we'll move on to questions on notice from the public. And at item 9 of the agenda, there was an answer at 9.1 for a question from Emma McNabb relating to a complaint regarding odour from burning incense in Lewin Avenue. There was an answer from a question from Natisha Knight in relation to the LCZ. There was an answer to Joel Hodson in relation to a question regarding the TPC hearings. There was an answer from a question from Boyd and Hingston Muir regarding CCTV cameras. An answer to a question from Alison Rogers regarding LPS hearings, and an answer from Mark DeMillan regarding development applications. Moving on to item 10, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Fox.
I'm not quite... Well, what I'm concerned about is the CAT management officer, whether that position that we used to have will be, that person will be replaced, and what can we do about the number of feral cats that are being reported in the Tinderbox and Huntingfield area, and how can we support state government in trying to eradicate them?
Ishiki.
Thank you. We have actually replaced the cat management officer. Our new staff member started a couple of weeks ago in that position. It's not called cat management officer anymore. It's biodiversity officer, but with a focus on wildlife and pest and invasive species, so that I suppose cat management work will form part of the work that that role manages. That work, we will continue, I suppose, the work that we do in terms of feral cat management. So broadly that is education and awareness. We work with parks and wildlife, particularly in the Peter Murrell Reserve, around trapping as well as surveillance. We respond to complaints regarding cats, and also do some of our own active cat trapping as well. So we have a suite of actions that we continuously progress, and we're always happy to meet and have a discussion about, you know, more details of what that program looks like if it would assist.
Councillor Fox.
I'm very pleased to hear that. I've been telling a lot of people who've been contacting me that council does nothing about cats because it's not our jurisdiction. So I'm very pleased to hear the answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions without notice from councillors? Councillor Vane.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So I've got a question just around the council communication engagement survey. So council's undertaking this engagement survey to understand how the community prefers to hear from council and access information. The focus for completing the survey appears to be quite electronically based so far. So my question is, does council have any plans to do face-to-face engagement to ensure capturing responses from residents who prefer receiving information that way as well?
It's just me.
Yes, indeed we do. Staff intend to do a series of face-to-face exercises to promote the survey, and they include visits to the Kingba Sports Centre, there'll be a presence at the Night of Lights, meetings within the precinct, Kingba Sports Precinct, where there are groups meeting, looking to do a pop-up at shopping centres where there's promotion of the survey, so certainly yes, there is an intent to promote as broadly as possible we can the existence of that survey, so we maximise the returns we get and make it as meaningful as possible.
Excellent, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thanks, Acting Mayor. Just a question regarding, and actually a thanks first to staff for holding the community meeting at the sports precinct last Wednesday night. And I'm just wanting an update in regards to any feedback from the stakeholders. Are people generally happy with how things are going? Any kind of questions or things we need to know about?
It's just me.
Thank you. The meeting went really well and I think was really positively received by all those in attendance. They got a update on the status of the project, and when I say the project, I mean the AFL High Performance Centre development and all the associated community infrastructure that goes with that. There were some questions. They were generally around timeframes. Obviously, there is going to be impacts on all stakeholders within the precinct over the next couple of years as we do that development. Part of the intent of setting up this group was to provide a means of communication where these groups can attend a forum and then collaborate in relation to the impacts that are going to be associated with the various construction projects. So those questions were answered by our project team.
Councillor Lindsay, anything further?
Aye.
Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just a clarification from Mayor. Mr. Dennellan asked a question about a road sign that had been replaced. I just didn't quite understand the response. Was Mr. Dennellan referring to a sign that had previously been there, missing, and then needed to be replaced? Or were we talking about a new sign and a new reduction?
It was a new sign and a new reduction, Councillor Day.
Is that right?
It's more complicated.
Okay, never mind.
It was a new sign and a new speed reduction.
Yeah, that made total sense to me because I was just wondering why I would go down what you explained to that route if it was just to plonk another sign back.
Somebody didn't rip the sign out of the ground and run away with it. It was a new sign and a new reduction.
Then my second question was just in relation to our last council meeting. We, as councillors, gave indicative support for an extension of way service to a part of Leslie Vale, and we've had correspondence from some residents for it and some residents obviously against it. Those against have sought clarification as to why there isn't an opt-out clause for those, and claiming that other councils have had given that opt-out clause. So could it please, even if it's on notice, that we provide a response and the specific bit of policy or legislation that indicates why we couldn't, if we can't, provide opt-out provisions for those residents in Leslie Vale, just so it's clear and on the record.
Mr. Stewart.
Yeah, look, I'll take the substantive part of that question on notice, but we don't have an opt-out situation at the moment within Kingborough. The reason for that is because we have a contract with a provider that will be driving past those properties, and from a cost efficiency standpoint, it's the approach we've taken. But look, I'll take that question on notice to provide you a proper answer.
Thank you. Are there any further questions without notice?
No.
That being the case, we'll move on to questions on notice from councillors at item 10. There's an officer's response to a question from Councillor Dean in relation to noise complaints at the Salty Dog Hotel, and response to a question from Councillor Midgley regarding the textile apparel recycling program, and there's an answer to a question from Councillor Midgley regarding biochar programs. Moving on to item 12, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. And then moving to item 13.1, petitions received in the last period, opposition to proposed dog exercise and obedience training facility at Sedgebrook Road Reserve. With a recommended motion that the petition opposition to proposed dog exercise and obedience training facility at Sedgebrook Road Reserve, Lot 1, Taronga Road, containing 160 signatures, be received and referred to the appropriate department for a report to council. Before I call for a mover and a seconder to that motion, we have broken our own convention recently in relation to receipt of petitions. And whilst there's nothing in the meeting procedures that prevent councillors from talking on petitions, just remind my colleagues that at this stage all we have before us is the receipt of the petition and noting of it, and no advice from officers in relation to that petition. So I'm not going to dissuade anybody from speaking, but just note that our convention previously, which we broke on the last occasion, and I was guilty of it as well, is that we do just receive these petitions for noting for debate on another occasion. But again, you will do as you please. Can I have a mover, please, for the recommended motion? Moved in Councillor Fox and seconded in Councillor Rantoli. Councillor Fox.
As to per the last 38 years on council, we have never discussed petition. We pass this on to staff for a report, and I look forward to the report, and then we'll debate it. Thank you.
Are there any further speakers on the motion? That being the case, I will put the motion. The motion is that the petition be received and referred to the appropriate department for a report to council and more fully stated in the agenda and on the screen before us. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 To the contrary, no. That is carried unanimously. Moving to page 11, item 14.1, the appendices. Can I please have a mover that the appendices attached to the agenda be received and noted? Moved in Councillor Antoli, seconded in Councillor Fox. Councillor Antoli.
Just as no questions from me.
Anything arising? No. That being the case, I'll put the motion that the appendices attached to the agenda be received and noted. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. Moving to item 14.2, the financial report. And the recommended motion on page 13 that council endorses the attached financial report as at 31 May 2026. Can I have a mover, please, for that motion? Moved in Councillor Bain and seconded in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So this is the financial report as at 30 May 2026, so it's going back to last financial year. The report tells us that the full-year forecast at 30 May was a deficit of just over $1 million. And that's around $1.5 million under the original budget figure of $2.5 million, so it's come down a long way. That forecast deficit figure improved by $180,000 between the end of April and the end of May. So I guess the question here now is, given we passed the 30th of June, do we have any indications of where the budget finished at the 30th of June? And just before I get an answer on that, I guess just noting that the year-to-date 30th of May for this report was $3.4 million favourable to budget, so we must have been expecting quite a big bit of movement in June. And then just around some details on page 24 of our council agenda, in the income area and the summary operating statement of all, I note that some of the year-to-date actuals is actually more than the forecast budget that we have against some of them, so I think there might be some details missing there. That's in income levies, reimbursements and other income, some I note. But overall, my question is, yeah, have we got an indication of where we sit come 30th of June?
Mr. Speaks.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. We don't right now. We're only early into July at the moment, so we're just sort of commencing our end-of-year processes and so forth. So it's going to be a little time yet before we have a clearer picture. So we'll work towards that. Our best indication will be when we prepare the draft financial statements, which we'll table for the audit panel's review next month. In relation to your comments on page 24, I think you said, yeah, look, there probably were one or two there where we could have made some further adjustments. So I think that the comment is fair. We are expecting some of those adjustments or variances to sort of reduce over the June period. So we didn't want to get too bullish about being too bold about sort of increasing the forecast too much.
Councillor Bain.
That's all I had. I'm happy to hear from other councillors.
Are there any further speakers to the motion? There being no further speakers to the motion, Councillor Bain, I assume you've contributed all you intend to. So I put the recommended motion. The council endorses the attached financial report as at 31 May 2026. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. Moving on to item 14.3, Kingra Sports Precinct Development Arrangements and Land Disposal. And the recommendation, or the recommended motion on page 37, as printed starting... Sorry, I'm at page 37, and as on the screen, can I please have a mover for the recommended motion? Moved in Councillor Antoli and seconded in Councillor Fox. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So this is the next step in getting the Devils High Performance Centre and our actually wider sports precinct built. Council has backed this project all the way since December 24, and the construction is being paid for by the state government and the AFL. Not by our ratepayers. Tonight we're doing two main things. First, we're confirming the leases to the football club, which have already been advertised twice with no objections. And second, we're putting the construction licences and agreements in place so work can actually start while the paperwork on the subdivision catches up. I do want to flag that legal advice has picked up that the backup lease, this gets a bit technical, I'll try and explain it in plain English, that the backup lease to the state government, so that's the safeguard, that means council never gets left holding a $100 million building, that needed to be publicly advertised under the Local Government Act, just like the other leases were. So that didn't happen in the earlier rounds, and it's a bit curious for me why it's on the surface now, but I'll ask that question in a moment. Tonight's motion fixes it the right way with full public advertising and a 21-day window for anyone to object. And if I may commence with a question. So if I could ask you through you, Acting Mayor, or maybe you could answer, why did the Section 178 implication only get identified after two prior rounds of advertising? That's my first question.
Sure. Mr. Smith?
When we originally put this matter to council, the council approval included a clause that there was to be a reversionary lease. Now, we believed that was sufficient in terms of satisfying the requirements of Section 178 of the Local Government Act. And bearing in mind that this lease may never be required, it will only be required if the lease with the Devils happens to fall over, which is unlikely. So I guess it is a legal technicality that was picked up by our lawyers, and whilst there is a very low risk, our lawyers indicated that if council wanted to remove all risk in relation to this matter, it should go through this process.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. That's a good answer. Thank you very much. And I offer no criticism in my question. I'm actually glad we picked up the issue. And I note that this is an incredibly complicated venture for any council, let alone ours. So thank you to our lawyers for picking that up. Does this change in any way alter our risk profile around this development or any financial exposure?
Mr. Stewart. So, as Mr. Smee has already referred to, this was always part of the plan in terms of having a reversionary lease or an underlying lease, if you like. So if the lease to the Tasmanian Football Club was to cease for any reason, that it wouldn't come straight onto council books, that it would go to the state, and then we would have a conversation with the state around the future of the asset and the use. So in so much as it was always part of the plan, it doesn't change the risk profile, but having gone through this process and making sure that it is out of abundance of caution that we've gone through 100% the right process, it minimises our risk further.
Councillor Antoli. That's all the questions from me.
Are there any... Councillor Fox.
I picked up on the same issue, and I wondered why the words reversionary lease aren't mentioned in the actual motion that we're putting tonight.
Mr. Stewart? Or Mr. Swain?
Yeah.
So, thank you, Acting Mayor. And look, the wording in terms of the recommendation for resolution tonight is on advice from our lawyers. So they have provided us the language here to make sure that it was tight. I guess the intent is the lease only becomes active or only becomes enacted if the lease to the Tasmanian Football Club was to cease for some reason, but it is still a lease that we'll be signing. So the language, therefore, is as is written by on advice from our lawyers.
Thank you.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you. Just a question around the recommendation E, where it states, authorises the CEO to finalise and execute a shared use licence agreement with the Tasmania Devils Football Club in relation to use of ovals and their associated infrastructure within the Kimber Sports Precinct. Is that as much about making sure that our existing tenants get their fair share as it is about making sure that the Tasmanian Devils get their share?
If there's something to elaborate on, Mr. Stewart will do it, but yes.
Yeah, and I will add something to that answer because it was an excellent answer, but I'll go into a little bit more depth. When the feasibility for bringing this project to Canberra was originally being discussed, there was a MOU that was drafted between the Tigers, the Knights and the Football Club and Council to make sure that we had the capacity and the utilisation of the sports fields was going to be filling the needs of all the parties. Basically, the shared use agreements is bringing that to life and locking that into an agreement that will be able to be used on an ongoing basis from here on out. So it's something that has been negotiated to make sure that all the stakeholders have adequate use of our sports fields.
Thank you.
Councillor Mayne, anything further? Are there any further? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Thanks, Acting Mayor. And yes, I agree, it's really great that we've had lawyers look over this so carefully. It is a really important and big investment for the area. Not being paid by us, that's another good bonus on that one, but so many great benefits for the community for this particular development. I also had a question just around the shared user what does it involve and the protection that it does give to the existing tenants. So I guess in hearing that response, I'm quite assured that this user agreement does, give existing protection, I guess, and equal use to the existing tenant, so that's really good to know. If I can please understand, because it is quite lots of, I guess, quite a legal report, and thank you to council staff for making the time to really talk through that with me today, so I fully understood that. But can I please understand why does the Chief Executive Officer need to be authorised when Council has already given consent for these agreements to be negotiated?
Yes, it's me.
The reason for that is that Council's resolutions to date have authorised the Chief Executive Officer to progress various agreements, to progress and to negotiate. So what this resolution is seeking to do is to authorise the CEO to now finalise and execute. So it's the final approval that's required for decisions that Council have already given consent to, but this is giving that authority to now sign those various agreements.
Councillor Mitchell. Okay. Councillor Dean.
Thank you. Just a really, really minor one. Recommendation F includes that we're going to authorise the construction of Oval 3 and associated works and related works just generally within the precinct. And why is Oval 4 not specifically named? Well, why is Oval 3 named up and not the, obviously, fourth oval?
Mr. Stewart. So Oval 3 will be delivered through a contract through the Tasmanian Football Club, so it's not a council directly delivered project, and therefore it's named up separately, so that we can make sure that, again, out of abundance of caution, everything is very clear and transparent here. In terms of the related works through the Kingsborough Sports Precinct, the full list of all the things is not in there, and there will likely be separate procurements that will come before council as council undertakes them, because they'll be done through the council's procurement policies and approaches. But there may be other things that impact the development of Oval 3, sort of things around the periphery that are needed to be done to enable that construction to occur, and this is the approval to be able to progress them.
Anything further, Councillor Day? Or any further contributions? Councillor Antoni, question?
Yes. Thank you, Acting Mayor. I don't believe this is covered in the documentation, and because this is legal, very legal motion, my question is, what happens if we do get an objection in the next 21 days? What does that trigger? Does anyone know?
It's a good question, Mr. Swee.
If we receive an objection to the proposed reversionary lease with the state government, council will need to consider the merits of that objection and then make a decision. So that objection would need to be in relation to loss of public recreation amenity. So the Act is quite specific in relation to the grounds of which an objection can be made and sustained. Now, Council would then need to consider the merits of the objection, make a resolution, and anyone making the objection would then have the right of an appeal. But again, that appeal would need to be made on very specific loss of public recreation grounds.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further contributions? No, that being the case, I'm going to make a contribution myself. Very short. It's excellent to see this project being progressed. It's an incredibly important project for Kimberra, or has become an incredibly important project for Kimberra, with everything that it offers our community. Lawyers love complicating things, and this is no exception, but I am glad that that we're resolving this issue now rather than in the very unlikely event that this lease becomes required, finding out that we haven't complied with the Local Government Act at that point in time. It's good that we're resolving that issue now. So I thank staff and those working on the project for the report for picking that up. Councillor Antoli to sum up? No?
Thank you.
I put the recommended motion then. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. It's carried unanimously. Moving to item 15, notice of motion. There are no notices of motion at the time the agenda was compiled. We therefore move to item 16. Can I have a mover, please, that in accordance with the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes and applications for leave of absence. Moved in Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Rantoli. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
To the contrary, no. That's carried unanimously. Therefore, in accordance with the Council Meetings and Council Workshops audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease, and I declare the open session of Council adjourned at 6:41 p.m. And thank you all very much for your attendance, and for those watching online, thank you for being with us online this evening. Good night.